I'm going to turn it into a class to teach teachers, so give me some good feedback. So I designed it this way, 5 times, all right. I believe we have to start with ourselves, you know. How can I relate to you or you if I don't know who I am? How can I ever get married? How can I ever work in a place where I have to work with other people unless I know who I am? And that's why I started with that. And then I went to others. And I have discovered through experience and through watching other people that the hardest thing in this world, you've all had relationships. The hardest thing in this world is to do what you want to do. Whether it's a career or whether it's travel or whether it's an interest, do what you want to do and keep a relationship that puts other kinds of pressures on you. What's the fine line of doing what you want to do and still keeping relationships? It's hard. It's hard. I'll speak more about that tomorrow. It's difficult, but it's exciting, I think. The third one is listening to ideas and events. The reason I came upon that is that this last year I taught a pilot class for high school students, and it really dealt a lot with issues and what's going on in the world. And it is so scary. How do you know? I mean, are you for Bush or for Clinton? And how do you know? How do you know? You say, well, how can you know? They're politicians, you know. We need sorting process to know what's going on in the world, to know what's going on in this country. There's terribly crucial issues. And doggone it, I don't want to leave it to the politicians to know what's going on. That means I better be aware, and whatever goes on has to go through my sorting process. So I can say, oh, here's what I believe. Okay? And you see, we'll disagree on a lot of those things. But that's okay. And the fourth one, I'm a futurist. A friend and I started the futurist organization in South Dakota. And we've had some marvelous topics. And I guess I'm a futurist, and I think we all should be, because that's where we're going. And what is our world going to be like in 5 years? And you say, well, I don't know. No, but I want to have some input and some interest in how that is decided. So the futurist, and the last one. And some people said, well, that should be first, is listening to God. And of course, I believe that God is a part of all of this. I do this simply for teaching purposes, you know. So those are the five. Now, you have to know where I'm coming from. This is your class. I mean, don't look at me like I knew what I was talking about. Look on me as somebody who's sharing some ideas and some discussion. At this point, I think we should get a little bit acquainted. I don't like to teach any class unless I know something about the people. Now, I have a real short way of doing this, and I'll do that, and then we'll take a little bit longer way, okay? My short way is, how many of you are the oldest in your family? Raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6? God, nine. I don't know, that's more balanced. You know, we're the bossy ones. You're the ones who are going to say, well, what did you mean by that? Okay? They're usually the ones who are going to, I only wanted a couple of you. How many of you are the youngest? Okay. All right, he's going to bring some fun in here. You know what the youngest are like? It's like, well, I'm here to have fun, see? And if there's any cost to this, well, somebody will arrange it. Whatever happens will happen, see? And of course, this is all true. How many of you are middle?
Right in the middle.
Okay. See? All right. We're the ones that you need, because we get along with everybody, don't we?
Is that what you want to do?
All right, I have to ask this, and you have to be real honest. Honesty is part of this class. How many of you like to talk?
Used to.
Okay, all right. And there's some quiet ones. But boy, I need some talkers besides me, all right? On a scale of 1 to 10, because I don't know what you want, you have some expectations of this class. You can't have any expectations because there aren't any. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being you want to just have fun, 10 means you want to learn a lot. You want to, you're going to learn something. Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, what are you?
Eight.
Learn a lot. He's going to be confronting me. See, and this is important for me to learn. You haven't decided yet, have you? That look on your face says you're not sure.
I missed one word. I had one hearing aid. My other hearing aid is in repair. That's why I'm sitting at this.
Okay,
year.
That's why. Well,
I would say eight also.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's no ones here, huh?
I heard about four.
Okay. I'm about a three myself. No, I'll tell you why. Because if learning can't be fun, you know, you're going to go out of here and say, well, I sure learned a lot, but it wasn't any fun. And then you forget it. So it's got to be tied in with what turns you on, what interests you. How many Norwegians here? Norwegians. Okay. That's just for my own personal.
Oh, yes. You mentioned that the other day.
Okay, now that's my quick way of finding out, you know, a little bit about people. I sometimes do that when I have a large group, see, because then I can just see the hands, and I know who's the oldest, and I know who wants to have fun and all that. Right now, I want each one of you, and I'll start, because we need to get acquainted, and tell a little bit about yourself, where you're from. I don't care what you want to tell. Something interesting about yourself. And then I want you to either do, or you can do both. Tell us of a skill that you would like to learn before you die. What is it you'd really, and I don't say, I want you to think big. Dreams usually are big, and we put them aside, and you say, well, being realistic, I'll never do that. I'll start out by telling you what I want to do. So either that and or tell us what's the age you'd most like to be and why. What's the age you'd most like to be? So one or the other. So I'll start with myself. I'm Joan Helmo. I live in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Retired as a school administrator a year ago, elementary school. I come out to the West Coast because three of my kids love it out here and they'll never move away. I still have two kids in Sioux Falls. Since I retired, I have been teaching teachers, and teaching always what I most love to do. A skill I would most like, I want to learn how to fly, you know. And my kids just kind of roll their eyes when I say that, but I would love to take flying lessons, learn how to fly sometime. It's still in the back of my mind. I don't know. Maybe when I see you in 5 years, I'll say, I learned how. Okay, who wants to be first? Tell us about yourself. See, I'm not the dictator of teachers, as we'll go right down the... You choose.
Grew up all around Puget Sound area. Worked with Native American Lutheran Ministries and worked with Ecumenical Ministries last 17 years. I wouldn't mind being president of World Council of Churches. If I wanted the big goal, that would probably be my big goal. What was the other thing?
What age you'd most likely be?
Oh, what age would I most likely be? Oh, probably 56. I don't want to be a full retirement age yet.
So that's
because I wanted to continue doing things.
Okay. Mark.
Mark.
All right, who's next? Lynn?
Mm-hmm. And I'm from Wenatchee. My husband is from Sioux Falls.
Oh.
I grew up in Nebraska. Sioux Falls.
That's interesting.
I'm here as part of the Elder Hostel program. I'm teaching the creative thinking. And I'm an artist, and I've been a teacher too. And I have taught a class for teachers also, art in the elementary school. But what I would most like to be able to do, I think, is either to write or to paint, to say either in images or in writing, is something that would really mean something to another person. It would be really valuable, and you know, someone else would say, oh, that really means something to me. And the age I'd like to be, I think I like being the age I am. I'm 53, although it sounds a lot older than I feel. I like being this age. I feel I'm old enough now to do what I want. And there's less things I have to do.
Something to be said for that, isn't there? Mm-hmm. Old enough now to do what I want and know what I want.
Well, actually, I don't just know what I want. I'm still waiting to see what I'm going to be when I grow up. But I am working on it. I mean, I'm back in school again, so...
We're going to come back to that in a while. What do you want to be when you grow up? And we say that flippantly, but it's not a flippant question, so... Okay.
And just a week ago, a big celebration for my 80th birthday.
Oh, congratulations.
And the energy level has been going down, so I'd sure like to be younger. I'd say about 40. That's when I was probably the most productive. And but my goals is still there to complete 4 family history books. And I've got a lot of groundwork done and a lot of charts that I've made in the draft form, but I am still in the collecting stage, and I don't know how I'm ever going to get it done before I die, but I'm going to try.
There's a class on that. Ryan Family History's here.
Yeah, he's here. Mm-hmm.
I talked to her this morning.
Yeah,
I talked to her.
Mm-hmm.
So many people are here now. Okay, Howard. Interesting that you said 40 and not 20. I wouldn't want to be 20 again. I just purely wouldn't. I think those were hard years. So, okay, who's next?
And I wouldn't want to go back to 40 again, no. I'm 81, and I've had an interesting life and thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm a Christian, so I'm not afraid of dying, but I would just like to. My ambition is to continue to be independent and live in my own home as long as possible. And because I'm legally blind, so it's a problem. But that's my one ambition.
Well, it sounds like you got the spirit to do it, doesn't it? Good. Francis, was it?
Yes.
Okay. Francis, who's next?
I was born in Denver and grew up in the Midwest, and I came out here in this country that's so different from the Midwest. It's a foreign country when you come out here, especially Birmingham. And I need to visually get hair, but I get along just fine. And I like the age I am. I've lived through a good life. I've seen a lot of things develop, and I do a lot of volunteer work, very active, days I can be active, try to stay independent. as far as learning, any ambition for learning? Well, you learn something every day, but no big dream.
What I hear so far is all healthy talk. You know, the determination and not only the determination, but the things you're doing to keep active and keep young, and you're going to go for it, aren't you, Frances? Good for you. Okay, who's next?
I had a wonderful life, a lot due to the man I married, because we have lived in East Africa, we have lived in England, he's a very joyful, adventuresome man, and I'm sure that some of the things I've done, if I hadn't married such a man, I may not have had the courage to do it on my own. But he was senior pastor at Mount Olives Lutheran Church in Mission Viejo, and just retired. And I was a little worried about that retiring. I said, I don't know. But it has turned out to be just great. And so life continues to be good. And I've liked every age. It's been great, except I guess if I had to choose one, it would be 35, 36. Maybe it's because those were the years we were in Africa, and it was such an exciting time. But my children were 11 and 14, and everything was, I was smart enough. I was, you know, you're cool at that age. So that was a good.
You have fond memories of how long were you there?
3 years, in Africa. And life has just been very good to us, and I'm grateful for that.
Okay.
My dream is, I would like to be between 50 and 60-ish, you know, before 60, for more energy and doing things. My dream is that I could play an instrument, and I don't know if that's ever too late. And I would like to take my language exam in Norwegian. I have French, English, and German, and I would like to take my Norwegian exam. I'm fluent in Norwegian, I write it, but I don't know if I can manage to commute to Ballard and get my exam, my papers for it. Then I could prove it, you know, if someone doesn't believe it. That is ambition is kind of closer than playing an instrument, you know. I love music, and I know much music, you know.
You have a lot of interest in, don't you?
Yeah, oh no, it's too much. I like to paint. But one can dream.
Oh yes.
It's amazing to have a dream.
Without a dream, it will never happen. Yeah. It's having the dream. If you don't have a dream, it will never happen.
No, that's right. So that's
one of the things that I hear you saying, I think, I'll pick up on that, is the only reason, because it never bothers me that I'm getting older. My kids have always known and broadcast to the world how old I am. And the only reason, now I'm retired and, you know, I'm doing a lot of things, but it's like there's so much I want to do that I don't, and yet I find myself slowing down. And am I going to be able to do all the things that I want to do? So keeps me from being bored, I guess. All right, Joanne, or who's next?
My name's Edward. I'm a retired biological scientist, and I'm here in the Elder Hostel program. This morning I learned that I've used my left brain a lot over the last few years, and so one of my big goals is to use the right side of my brain in communicating with my inner voice and listening to what it's telling me. Mm-hmm. And so that's the reason I came to this class.
Oh, well, I'm as far right brain as you can get. The only way that my left brain kicks in is that I have to be places on time. I mean, there's something in me that says, you got to be there at 7:30, then you better be there at 7:25. And I think that's a left brain thing, isn't it? But I'm just way over here, so you're going to have to deal with that. That's one thing I could have asked you, if you're right or left brain. But that's an interesting subject, isn't it? You learn a lot about yourself when you say, I didn't know I was that way. We need a balance, don't we? Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting. Okay, Joanne?
I lost my vision when I was 9 years old, and recently, in about the last 7-8 years, I've been losing my hearing. And I've worked for about 9 years with people who are losing their vision, helping them to adjust to their vision loss and learn ways of doing new things and to be able to live as independently as possible. But now that I'm losing my hearing, it's more difficult to communicate with people. So now I'm interested in getting into computers and being able to, well, two things, just get a job working with some computers, and secondly is putting things into Braille for people with visual problems.
I have a feeling you're not going to be slowed down too much.
She's quite an inspiration.
I like the age that I am, like Lynn said. I like it very much, and I certainly don't want to go back, but I think sometimes there are some real advantages to thinking about retirement. In other words, I would be able to create my own schedule. So that age looks kind of appealing to me at times. Mm-hmm. As far as what I'd like to do, I enjoy travel a great deal and probably would like to do more travel. I think I'd like to experiment in a number of different ways than I've been able to in the past. I sometimes traveled alone, sometimes with other people. I would like to do a lot more traveling with people with disabilities and experience some travel from their perspective, because mine has always been extremely visual, and in the last years I've become more aware, thanks to Joanne, about the world is a whole lot bigger than just visual. So I like that experience of trying to experience life in a little different perspective.
One of the things we're going to be talking about is how we limit ourselves, because we stay with what we're comfortable, what we know, and when you step out like this, it's like, oh, but it's going to be too much work, it's going to be uncomfortable, and why should I do that? Because, you know, and yet we need to knock down some of that, those walls. So I like that kind of thinking.
I'm Jerry, I'm retired, I'm not half, but left brain or right brain, I'm half brain.
Half brain.
You said that I didn't. You also have to respond to what age you'd most like to be and or what skill you'd like to learn before you die. Is there something that you'd really like to do that you haven't done and you say, that's a dream of mine?
I always look forward to being 100, and I can't wait to be 100, because then I think I'll be a wise man.
You can sit on the mountaintop then and have an ashram. And
that would be great.
He's my husband, so you see what I mean.
Okay. I prefer that you join somehow in the circle. You're back away from us.
We're in chairs if there's a
room over there.
Thank you, Jerry. Okay. I told you a little bit about the classes. Let me go through. This is a participatory class. That means you jump in at any time. I'm not the expert here. I'm just guiding a discussion, and if you want to go a different way or if you don't understand where I'm getting at, you have to be warned that, and this is my right brain, I'm a random teacher in a sequential world. I discovered a few years ago that I don't teach or think like most other people, and I had worked in a school system where this is what they teach now, and then they have a test, and then they do this, and I don't think that way. I hear an idea, and all of a sudden, an idea comes from, and that's just the way my mind works, from out here, and then it comes out here, and you're going to say, where in the world did that come from? So that's by way of warning. But also, if that idea comes popping out here, you're going to say, now wait a minute, where'd that come from? Which keeps me from going way off track. So you take responsibility for the way this is going. Okay, let's talk a little bit about listening. There's three things though, first, before we talk about listening. I believe in making connections. Everything's connected. We don't see it in the world because I think we're so apart from each other and events and ideas that we don't see that there's connections. One of the fun things I do with kids and with adults is this little game. And at first it's like, doesn't make sense. And yet as they go along, all of a sudden they catch on. I say, how are a beetle and a Ford car alike? You say, well, they're not alike. And especially with kids, they scowl, but they look on it as a challenge. Pretty soon they're going to say, oh yeah, we know. It moves ahead, it's got energy, it's got, you know. And you say, well, what's this got to do with anything? It's a mindset that we have or could have that makes connections. I can look at you and say, hey, we don't have anything in common. Once you get to talking, I talked to these people last night, and all of a sudden, I'm from South Dakota, they're from Southern California. We know the same person. You had that experience, haven't you? You sit and talk to somebody, and pretty soon you say, oh yeah, I knew that person. And you make connections. They're there, but we have a mindset that keeps us separate, whether it's color, whether it's creed, whether, you know, it's like, let's keep those barriers up. No, let's make connections. Everything's connected. If I had time, I'd take you through that fun kids game, because pretty soon you say, oh yeah, I can see what the connection is. And it's not important to see the connection between a beetle and a Ford, but to have a mindset that says, yeah, there's connections out there, and I want to know, because then it opens the whole world for you. The second thing is, we have options. We always have options. Sometimes you say, well, I guess I have to. No, if you look at what your one option is, and take the time, you're going to find out you have more than one option. I talked to a young gal out here about 15 minutes ago who has two options, and that's hard for her because she wants both of them, see? So it's hard not to have any, and it's hard to have more than one. So what's our shorting process? The last thing about listening is that it's magic. Magic happens when you listen. When you look in somebody's eyes and you find out who they are, you make connections. Magic happens. And I hope a little bit of that magic happens in the week ahead. How do you define listening? In a lot of different ways. Here's what some wise person said. Well, listening is a habit, by the way, and it's not a very easy one. Listening. Genius, and I think that involves listening, is little more than seeing things in unhabitual way. Genius is little more than seeing things in an unhabitual way. See, and here again, when I see things so compartmentalized and so straightforward, I miss all the interesting things out here. That's why I like my random thinking, but it also what gets in the way when I'm teaching, so be forewarned. We can all hear the same words, but we'll interpret them differently. And you know that's true. You know, if you're, why I'm into political today, I don't know. But if you heard Bush and you heard Clinton, depending on where you're coming from, you'll interpret Bush as, boy, he's right on, you know. And then Clinton says something, and because you're interpreting, you like one, you don't like the other, or the other way around. We interpret words, and we interpret them differently. So let's keep that in mind, because we're talking a lot about communication and about words. Expectations. I'm always uneasy when I start a class because I think, and I try to dispel some of the expectations. Don't have any expectations. Because I don't, you know. So we're going to pursue some ideas here, but don't expect anything of me. If you do, say them out so that I can respond to it. Otherwise, you carry away from you some unsettled expectations. Expectations get in the way. When my kids came for their reunion this summer out back to South Dakota, every one of them, I got five kids, I said, don't you dare have any expectations. Because if you do, you're going to be disappointed. Because, oh, somebody wants to do this, and it's like, well, I thought we were going to. As soon as you do away with expectations, it leaves it open for whatever, serendipity maybe. So, a few things about, and then I'll get into some activity here for you. Better stop me when it's over. I don't think the bell rings or anything, does it?
What about lunch, maybe?
Yeah. Well, I think this is over at 12:40, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would somebody take the job of telling me when it's 12:40?
Only if we want to quit, then.
That's what I was talking about. My stomach will let me know. I know.
Because it'll be.
Well, we'll hit you in the clock.
This clock is going. We don't teach listening in school. We teach writing, and we teach math, and we teach all these skills. We don't teach listening, and it's the most important skill we can learn. I believe it. You can disagree with me. We might have an interesting discussion. Nobody has to agree with me here. You understand that, don't you? But I believe that listening is the most important because when we listen, we learn. Well, I'm going to get to that in a minute. But there are some myths about listening. And one of them is that it's easy. You say something to me and I say, well, I heard you. You know, and I know I hark back to when my kids were little, and I say, yeah, I heard you. And they look at, no, you didn't hear what I meant. I heard their words, but I didn't hear what they. It's not easy. F. Scott Peck, if you read his Road Less Traveled, speaks of a time when he went to hear a very important speaker, and he was fascinated by this man, and he said he listened so hard. When he was through, the perspiration just running down the side of his face because he had worked so hard at listening. And then he heard people walking out saying, boy, he didn't have anything to say. We didn't understand anything he said. Listening is hard. So let's start out with that idea. I can teach you how. I'll teach you how to listen, and I can do that. I bet I can do that in 15 minutes. I'll spell it out for you. If I had a blackboard, I'd spell it out for you. That's a myth. You have to want to. See, you have to be motivated. And when you are, I can teach you the skills, and then you're going to do it. So I can't teach you how. You teach yourself how when you're motivated. It's a myth that this is what does it, you know. I heard you. Well, and it fits in with what I just said, too. You hear the words, but that is not what real listening is. A myth. If I say it often enough and you hear it, you'll understand. Teachers, come on, this is what teachers believe, you know, as I'm teaching the sixth grade science class, math was terrible for me, so I'll use that. And the teacher would say, now here's how you do this, you know, and here, you know, and try it again. And me, I would sit there with this blank look on my face because I didn't understand. If I say it often enough, you will understand. No, there's much more to it than that. I think as a mother, I believe that. One of the problems, and I will get to this later, is that if I listen to you, I'm going to agree with you. There's so many things that we don't agree on. And we don't have to agree on them. We don't have to agree on them. But let's talk, because in talking and listening, maybe I'll change where I stand a little bit. I don't have to be so hard-nosed. I don't have to be so right. Okay, now what's hard about listening? It takes time, you know? Because if I'm going to hear somebody out, I'm going to hear my child out, I can find out, why are you so mad? Why are you so mad? You don't have to be that mad. Just go off to your room. If I sit down with that child and find out, well, somebody called him a name, or there comes understanding. And that's hard. Why? I don't have time. I got to make supper. I got to, you know. Listening takes time. The rewards are great, see, but we don't want to pay the price. We are surrounded always by people, noise, activities. Where is it you go to get away from? This is a legitimate question here. Where do you go to get away from people and noise and all of that?
Top of mountains.
Okay. Okay. What about the rest of you? Where do you go?
Inside.
But when you're surrounded by...
I can walk.
Can you? You've worked at that then, haven't you?
I don't know. Maybe I practiced it.
This is interesting. What is it, your left brain or right brain person? Because I was thinking, he would say top of a mountain too, and I'm not too old.
And he says he's left brain.
He was a chemical, right? You were a what? Scientist.
I didn't hear your description, so I...
Okay, anyway, I'm sorry. I just, interesting.
Well, you see, making connections again.
Yeah.
Aren't you? I go as seldom as possible to the mall. I had to go to buy a gift, and boy, I ran in there and ran out again because the noise, the people, I feel hemmed in. You know, I can take it when I have to, but then I have to get away. I believe that unless you have a way of being yourself, being by yourself, getting away, you're always getting input from other people. Then how do you know? This is why I started with self, because you've got to know yourself. And how do you do that when you're always surrounded?
I have a question on this. I'm wondering, though, if it makes a difference if a person's an extrovert or an introvert. I mean, I know an introvert really has to go and be by themselves in order just to collect their thoughts, but an extrovert sometimes knows what they think by being with other people and talking about it.
Energized by people.
Yeah.
Is there anyone who would respond to that? Anyone who really considered
this? I think part of that is you have to be right within yourself, or be strong within yourself to be able to do, whether extrovert or introvert.
Know yourself.
Know yourself to be able to portray out. Whether it be an extrovert or an introvert, you need to be strong within yourself to know that you can do that.
Well, I've always had to be by myself, apart from every day. Even if it was just to go out in the garden and pick corn and get away from the kids for a while. And now I have a nice little patio back in my house that I can't hear the phone and I can't hear the doorbell. And I go out there and listen to the birds up in the trees and have a time to myself.
That's great. And you're comfortable inside your own skin, aren't you?
Well, I guess I feel that way too, but I know I'm an introvert. And my question is it true that all people, I mean, are there some people who really don't necessarily need, I mean, I don't know because I only know it from one point of view. That's the question. Are there some people who know what they think better when they are talking with another person? I mean, is it really true that we all need time alone, or is that more true? I know it's true for introverts.
Well, my problem with that is that an extrovert still needs time with himself to know what he believes. Otherwise, he's getting input, he, she, getting input from whatever's going on outside. And don't you need to distance yourself from that or be alone in order to? I couldn't speak to them. I would have trouble with it because how do I know who I am? I've got to get inside my skin and be alone to do it.
According to Myra Briggs, I'm an extrovert, but I definitely need time alone.
When I work with high school students, this happened just a few months ago, and I can't remember what the topic was, and all of a sudden it occurred to me, and I said, do you kids ever have time alone? Do you? And it's like, why should I have time alone? No. If they're at school, and they're with their friends and their teachers and their class, they get home and they immediately get on the telephone. And then in the evening, they've got to get going to a ball game or something. If they're home, the TV is on so that their mind is filled. And they're growing up feeling like it's important that they have other people around them. The security in that. And I have a concern with that. I think we need to release people to know that it's okay to be alone. You know, I have to live inside my body. I better be comfortable with who I am.
Silence seems to frighten some people. Yeah. You know, I have friends like that. They cannot have the house silent. They have to have music. They have to have people.
Speaking from this in a spiritual perspective, I would say that my personal preference in worship is to walk into a building early enough that I can have time to meditate and pull myself into that situation and forget about everything else and just center on that worship experience. And I come from a liturgical background, a Lutheran background, where we do that. We have time for quiet, we have time for organ music, which is helpful in meditation, and then the worship. I know that other people come from backgrounds where they want to walk into a building and suddenly everybody is talking and they're you know, making them feel welcome and all of that. And that's a different experience, but it's not my experience. I want a time for aloneness before worship.
I think that everybody who would have those experiences that you talk about, coming in and being quiet, would come to value that. That's my perspective. I mean, maybe they're used to coming in and saying, oh, hi, Lynn, and how are you, and starting to talk. But I would, from my perspective, people who would come to see that as the pattern would come to appreciate and miss it when it's not there. In my church, it's kind of noisy, and what makes it really hard is that the organist is going to be heard downtown. So I'm sitting there in church getting ready to worship, you know, and I went to the pastor and I said, what can I do about this? Because I find other people are thinking the same thing. I mean, she blasts us out of there and I can't be worshipful and he said, oh, Joan. He was afraid I was gonna go and talk to her, you know. Well, since then, I guess, I don't know if word got back or whatever, but she's toned it down. Before a service, I don't know. I don't think you can jump into a service and say, now I'm worshipful. You need the preparation for it. I agree with you. And when you talk about their background, that's the habit. That's what they've grown up with.
I heard a comment related to these ideas recently where someone said, prayer is speaking to God. But to listen to God, you must have a quiet period. You must be in meditation.
I like that. Prayer is speaking to God and
meditation or a quiet period is required in order for you to listen.
Yeah.
I am picked up by a band to go to my church, and sometimes I'm there in plenty of time, which I like. I like to read a little bit in front of him or anything like that. And it irritates me just terribly when they're late and I dash into church at the last minute. Maybe the services have already started and I never get much out of that service because I'm just not prepared.
And I think maybe this idea we're going to come back to, because what do we do? I just told you we always have options. Does she have an option in that situation? Sure she does. Sure she does. We always have options. It is up to us to say, well, I wouldn't go that far, but I think I could do, you know. We need to take a look at our options and say, because when I went to church and was frustrated, I thought, this is not, you know, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. So I looked at my options and made a decision for myself. What are our options? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes we live with things and we don't have to. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we do. Mm-hmm. Okay, why did we listen? I hope I'm through talking here in just a minute. Wherever you are, be there. And I have a poster at home that says that. Wherever you are, be there. And it's the title of a class I teach for teachers, because the immediacy of what learning is about. And it's something I don't think I'll ever learn. Maybe if I get to be 100 and sit up on that mountain, you know, then I will understand what it is to be there at any moment. And am I thinking now about going to lunch? How could I? Maybe that's a poor analogy, because you're all wondering about lunch. If I'm thinking about what I'm going to do Friday night, and it's Tuesday morning, what does that do to the rest of my week, you know? Let me take care of Tuesday. What else should I be doing right now? Nothing. I should be right here with you and making the most of it and listening to you. Boy, what a gift. I want to be able to do that. I have a daughter who does it so well. I mean, she's just right there. I need to be around her.
That sounds like a contradiction from what you told us initially. You told us initially that you were a futurist. You were thinking about what you're going to do 5 years from now. And now you're telling us that we should be here now.
I don't think that's incompatible, because if I'm going to have money to pay my bills next year, a year from now, I'm not going to wait a year from now and say, well, I guess I'll, no. There's a difference between, I don't think it's a contradiction. And we're going to get back to that too, okay? I knew he was going to pick up on my contradictions. We need time to understand. Why is listening important? We need time to understand. I was married for 39 years before my husband died. And it's like, I was always being surprised. Where did that come from? You know, I thought I knew this man. We need time to understand, you know, and I think we get married and you say, well, now we're, boy, the listening has just started. need time to make decisions, you know. When you buy a new car, I bet you do a lot of listening to what the car salesman says, to what your spouse tells you, to what, you know, takes time. And you need to do a lot of listening in there. I'm not smart enough to make a decision of any import without doing a lot of listening. Listen, why? Because we need to prioritize, to grow, to change, and to enrich our lives. I want my life to get richer. Okay, how do I do that? Well, if I just hang on with what I have, then I'm not listening, because I'm cutting off all kinds of things. There's a power in understanding. Well, and you know, you have your own reasons. These are just some of mine, because I think it's important to listen. We've got to teach listening in school. Now that I've got into this because of Poland, I say we've got to help teachers include this in their classes. Okay, a little bit about, I've got 4 minutes. So let me jump right to, how well do you know yourselves? And how well have you been helped over the years to understand yourself? Let me jump back to, and you're going to remember, if I can, you can. When you're 10, 12 years old, I wish I had a blackboard here, but we can do it without that. just remember what people are saying here. Jump back to when you're 10, 12 years old. Now, honestly, what did you want to be? What did you want to be? Do you remember?
Fireman.
Fireman?
Yeah, fireman.
That's probably one of the... A lot of kids wanted to be a fireman, didn't they? Okay? Now, you remember. What did you want to be? Did you always want to be a scientist?
No.
Oh, what'd you want to be?
I never thought of it when I was 10 years old.
Okay, so what did you want to be?
I don't remember. I doubt if I had a goal when I was 10 years old.
Well, let me not say a goal. What did you want to be?
I wanted to be 11.
That reminds me of these little kids I see out here. And I'd love to talk to little kids. And I walked up to this one old girl and I said, "You're 8 years old, you know." "No," she says, "I'm 13. "Well, I'm good at guessing ages." She was 8. She said, "Well," then somebody came along and she said, "Well, I'm 9. "Well, she's not 9. She'll be 9 in 2.5 months. Yeah. But this is what kids do.
Yeah.
It's like, "How old are you?" "Well, in December I will be..." "Well, I don't do that anymore." "I don't do that anymore." Anybody else remember what they wanted to be? What?
I wanted to be a veterinarian.
Okay.
So I love animals.
Uh-huh. Okay. And you remember that, don't you? Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
I had a good friend who was a pastor, and he had a 3-year-old boy. And the boy was always wanted to be a pastor, wanted to be a preacher like his father, and always said that. He had his family gathered around one day, and so he was going to show off this kid. And he said, "Okay, what do you want to be, sonny, you know, when you grow up?" And he says, "I want to be a garbage man."
Well, and see, what do you hear here? Let's have a couple more. Anybody else remember what they wanted to be when they were a kid?
You'd have to take a couple years later for me.
That's fine.
Then I wanted to be a high school science teacher.
Oh, you did?
But I never...
You didn't become one?
No.
Okay. Anybody else remember?
Well, I was writing plays. And we acted them out, too, you know. I don't know if I could do that now, but I did it then.
Mm-hmm. You like to write?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some observations about this. Could any of these things not have happened? That kid could have been a garbage man, couldn't he? Could any of these things, could they all have happened? She could have been a better man, sure. And when I say goal, now, the teacher in me says, "Hey, I'm not talking about goal. I'm talking about clues. I'm talking about what kept it from happening. What do you think kept these things from it?" Let's say she really wanted to be a veterinarian. What kept it from happening for her? A writer. What kept it from happening?
I think your imagination lessens as you grow older.
Now, why?
Well, as a child, you just... full of imagination.
Uh-huh.
You lose it.
Well, you lose it, yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes other options appear, mm-hmm. you know, that maybe look more attractive. Or you realize the reality of, like, being a veterinarian, you probably have to take a lot of math. Or there's things like that would interfere. And,
or left brain.
Yeah.
Or what?
Left brain activity.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yes, and that's what school is about, too, isn't it? What I have discovered in using this activity is that what kept it from happening is that people are going to say, "Oh, you can't be that," you know? And if when you were 14 years old, you wanted to be a doctor or you wanted to be an astronaut, are you going to tell anybody? And if you do, what happens? What happens? Somebody's going to say, "Oh, that's ridiculous. You?" You know? And right away, the dream goes. Now, there isn't a one of these that couldn't have happened. Not to say that they should have.
Sociological studies have shown over and over again that the dreams of girls are squashed, or have been traditionally anyway, much younger than the dreams of boys, and much more severely, for what that's worth.
Well, then let me tell you about, maybe you saw that interview of who was it, the director of Jurassic Park and E.T. and...
Spielberg.
I saw an interview of him, and I'm fascinated by people, and so I, something like that comes on, I listen. And he talked about, it's like, what got you started? Well, do you know what got him started? When he was 8 years old, he told his mother he wanted to take films. Now, what would happen to you if you had said that? It's like, oh, come on, get real. You know, it's going to cost money, it's going to take time, you know. Well, she got what he needed and took him out in the in the desert. I think they lived in California. Took him out in the desert and he did his thing. She encouraged him. There are clues, so many clues in our lives. There's a reason why she wanted to be a veterinarian. She loved dogs. And instead of squelching them, let's encourage it. Is she going to find out she's not going to be a veterinarian? Sure she is. Let's pick up on clues and encourage them. Dreams are so fragile. I asked you, what is it you still want to do in your lifetime? Could you do them? Of course you could. What is it you want to do, Mark?
Be president of World Confident Church.
Could he? Sure. Absolutely. I firmly believe it. I firmly believe that because unless you believe it, it's not going to happen. See? So when I talk about the dreams you had as a kid, what could have happened, and I'm talking about your parents and the people around you, who said, well, that's interesting. Now, why do you want to do that? And how can I help you in this? Which Spielberg's mother did. How can I help you in this? Let me give you an activity that I did for myself and found it fascinating. If you want to take the time when you're on your own, you take a sheet of paper and you write down the time you're born, you know, things that happened. I was one of four children, and I was the middle one. I was third. We lived in Sioux Falls, then we moved to San Diego, and write down, and then I made some little comments about how my brothers and my sister were so much more talented than I. Any comments? Go through this activity. Do it, because and then the thought's going to hit you, and you're going to say, not just the facts, but how did you respond to them? How did you feel at that time? Why did this happen? And you'll have a page of your life, and then you look at it, and you're going to see clues. I know why I'm stubborn today and feisty. I grew up with two brothers that I was always competing with, and I've wondered, where does that come from? Well, see, I could have known that. And the most important person that you'll ever know in your life is yourself. But how well do you know yourself? And one last thing, and then we'll let you go because we're hungry. Always remember that you have, I don't care if you're 80 or if you're 40 or 50, you have more ability, talents, interests than you'll ever know. It's a lifetime of exploration. And isn't that exciting? You're still not through finding out what you're interested in. He's going to finish those books, I have a feeling. You're interested in it too, aren't you? Okay?